It's Jared of the GM on ESPN 102.5. The game, Titans off today. They're back tomorrow. And Floyd, you know what Wednesday has become on this show? It has become the daily Marcus, or the weekly Marcus Mariota approval poll day. That is when we take the official poll on Twitter at Jared Stillman for the Marcus Mariota official poll, which I'm not going to sugarcoat it around here. I'm a little worried about what the approval poll will come back for Marcus tomorrow. I'm a little worried about what we're going
to
see.
You want me to give you a little insight?
Yes. I would like to see what your estimation is. For example, Marcus was, in his first week, Mariota was 74% approval poll rating. Last week, he was 52%. What do we think it'll be tomorrow when it comes to Marcus's approval rating?
22%.
You think it'll be in the 20s?
Oh, it'd be awful.
I mean, I'm thinking like maybe the low 40s, the high 30s maybe.
I don't know.
Like 38%, 22%. That is bad. And in all not fairness to Marcus, last week it was 52% yes, 35% no, 13% no opinion. I'm afraid Marcus is going to lose the no opinion people to have the opinion of no. So I'm a little worried. Although what would be crazy is, like, let's say the Titans do what the Titans did in 2002, where they start off 1-4 and then go 11-5 into the playoffs. Marcus's approval poll graph would be something to look at towards the end of the year when they start winning games, about how high it climbs. But that will be tomorrow. Mike Vrabel was asked yesterday during his press conference about what's got to happen for Marcus to get going. This is what Mike Vrabel said.
You know, practice well. I mean, just continue to stay focused and be crisp and execute. And I think that you build trust and confidence on the practice field. That when you can execute in practice, you know, that should lead to game reality. You know, that's kind of what we always think. And, you know, there were some good things on Thursday. I'm not going to tell you that they were all great and they were all bad. I mean, because there were some good throws in there, but there are things that we need to fix, and that's a collective effort throughout the offense and me and the coaching staff.
So Vrabel doubled down on that yesterday on his coach's show, and just when you hear Vrabel talk about that, it doesn't inspire a lot of confidence in me that he expects Marcus to go out there and play better. Now, the one thing I don't have is, you heard him say there, hey, you know, get it done on the practice field and then have that translate to the games. I don't know if that means that Marcus has been practicing crappily or something. I don't know, because we can't watch practice, so we don't know. Plus, even if we could watch practice, we probably wouldn't really be able to know. I mean, I wouldn't. You would. But anywho, what do we make of Vrabel just saying, oh, just, you know, practice well, Marcus will be fine. It'll be, because to me, I hear that, and it goes in one ear and out the other. It wasn't like Vrabel standing up there saying, look, he's our franchise guy. We know him. We believe in him. We know this. It didn't feel that way. It felt like, what's Marcus got to do in order to be better? You know, he's got to practice a little bit better, and you know, just kind of, you know, keep it going, and you know, whatever. We'll see. You know, that's like saying, what'd you eat on the airplane? I mean, they brought by some peanuts. You know, I mean, now if you got a 4-course meal on that plane, they'd be like, man, we had the lobster and the sushi and it all came. But it's like, yeah, they gave me a bag of peanuts. And that's what I feel like Vrabel was saying there about Mariota.
Well, I mean, what do you want her to say?
I want him. I mean, this goes back to the, have they already made up their minds on Marcus? And are they already like, you know what, this guy is, he's not very good.
I don't know if they have or haven't. I know this. I know if you were in that position and you were watching them on a weekly basis, I mean, you're whatever your belief was is either getting stronger or weaker. I mean, it's going one way or the other. So, you know, I mean, I can't tell you what they're thinking. I can't tell you. You know, he's got to play better. He's got to play better. He's got to be a force. You know, he's got to be something. He's got to be able to, if he can't be inspired himself, or if he can't inspire, you know, some of the guys, he's got to be able to inspire others, you know, somebody. I mean, I just don't sense that that there's any. I mean, one of the, and I'm not a Baker Mayfield guy. I am not one of those, you know, the guy at Jacksonville. I'm not, but I do understand the allure of that, mm-hmm. because those guys, I mean, they are in it. I mean, they are loud and they are, you know, planting the flag, and they are, and it's easy for a group of guys to get behind somebody like that because they're boisterous and they're saying some stuff that, you know, you can't find a lot of people to say. Now, the question is, can they back it? And most of the time they can't. But if you find somebody that can, then, you know, you're probably in pretty good shape.
Well, I'm with you on that. Deshaun Watson, to me, is an example of a guy who, you know, everyone on that Houston team thinks, hey, we're good. We got Deshaun. We're fine. Deshaun will find a way to win us the game. Hey, Deshaun has 125 yards passing. That's fine. Deshaun will find a way to win us the game. And that's what kills me about Mariota right now, is I feel like Marcus, to your point about inspiring him, Marcus, it used to be the discussion with Marcus was, could he win them games? You know, could Mariota get to the point to where he could legitimately win them games? Now, we're sitting here saying, just don't lose the game, Marcus. Whatever you do, just don't lose it. And I hate being in that position. They're not saying to Deshaun Watson, whatever you do, Deshaun, don't lose the game. But that's where we are right here with Mariota. And to your point about inspiring the other guys, I think there's something to that. I think that Mariota used to inspire his teammates. Now, I think the teammates are like I am, where I'm saying, just don't lose the game, Marcus.
Well, yeah, I think what happens is, just like you were talking about before, you know, if you're a coach and you stand up there every single day and say, do your job, guess what? After a few days, they don't hear a word of that.
Mm-hmm.
That goes in one ear and out the other. And that's why you have to change those things up. And if you don't, then, you know, whether or not you're saying it, and whether, you know, you can go out every day to practice and say, and tell somebody, well, I told them to do their job. Did you really? Yeah, I mean, that's the fallacy of that whole thing. But if you don't, if you can't find a way to change that up and get the point across, which is do your job, then, you know, why, you don't even need to preach it. It doesn't even have to be a factor because absolutely nobody's listening.
The other side of that, too, is with Mike Vrabel, is with Marcus. Remember the throw to Tajay Sharpe where he missed a touchdown to Tajay Sharpe? Marcus, after the game, was talking about that missed throw to Tajay Sharpe. This is what Marcus said.
Marcus, there's one pass. I know Tajay, kind of a deep pass on the left side. Like, maybe you guys run different pages. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah. No, that was completely on me. He ran a great route. We had an opportunity there to make a play, and I just, you know, I missed it. And, you know, Tajay, again, I thought, won the ball, and given the opportunity, he made plays. And I just got to do a better job of giving him a chance.
I got to do a better job of getting in the ball. I got to not spike it on third down. I got to. And you've brought this to my attention, but I'm with you. I'm getting sick after games of saying, oh, yeah, you know, I just screwed that up. I'll get it done this time. I got it.
Yeah, but when we talked about this yesterday, and just a few minutes ago, we played the clip where Vrabel talks about accountability and do you, and then he said, and fix it.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do you any good to keep standing up in front of the guys and say, yeah, I messed that up. You know what? That's all well and good. That's accountable. But how are you going to fix it so it doesn't happen again? Because I agree with you. It doesn't do you any good to stand up there the seventh time and say, you know what, I messed him. I mean, that was my, I messed it up. Yeah, we know. You know, we know you messed it up. How are you going to fix it so you don't mess it up? That's what they want.
I mean, imagine having a child, right, and leaving your child at daycare, and you're the parent that was supposed to pick the child up from daycare, and you didn't, and your wife gets called by the daycare company, she's got to go leave work, go pick up the child because they're about to close, and your kid's there, and your husband forgot to pick him up from daycare, and you go home, and you're living, and you tell your husband, how did you forget to leave? Oh, I'm sorry, I left Johnny at daycare. I'm sorry, I need to fix that. Well, that's not going to make things better now. And that's kind of where I'm getting to with Mariota and the, you're right, I need to not spike that ball on third down. You think? I need to not miss the wide open touchdown. Is that the case? And again, I don't think Marcus is the only problem here, but boy, I mean, I'll say this about what Vrabel said about Mariota and what Mariota has said. I do not feel inspired by either guy about him as the quarterback right now. And that is bad. 615-737-1025 to your calls about Mariota. Plus, everybody always thought Mike Mularkey was the problem, which, by the way, they'll see Mike Mularkey this weekend with the Falcons. Everybody always thought Mike Mularkey and Terry Robiskie were the problem. What if the problem with Mariota is beyond coaching? And when will we know that that's the problem? 615-737-1025. We'll get into that. Jared and the GM, we are live from the Wholesale Inc. studio powered by RumbleOn.com. It's ESPN 1025, the game.
The challenge being, though, that you're only going to be able to tell if some of this has been corrected in game time?
Well, I mean, I think that's how we're always evaluated. I mean, that's the bottom line, is you get one crack a week to go out there and put your best product out there and to make changes in the game. If things are going in a different direction than maybe how you had planned for them to fix things during the game, I mean, that's all the challenge. That's the 3 hours and 10 or 15 minutes that we get every week, and then the players' time to go out there and put all the, you know, use all the work that they put in and get something out of it.
That was Vrabel talking about, hey, the practice and getting better, and maybe with Marcus they're going to need to do a lot more practicing and a lot more getting better here in the near future. Floyd, before we get right to the phones, the one question I have is, we're talking about Mariota and what has he got to do to get better and why is he getting worse and all that. At what point are his problems, you know, everyone blamed Mularkey for a lot of his problems, Mularkey and Robiskie specifically. Although he was a much better player under Mularkey and Robiskie than he has been under Vrabel, for whatever reason you want to have. At what point do we look at this and we say his problems are not Mike Mularkey's fault, they're not Terry Robiskie's fault, they're not Jason Michael's fault, they're not Ken Wisenhunt's fault, they're not Matt LaFleur's fault, they're not Arthur Smith's fault, they're not Mike Vrabel's fault? At what point do we get to the point to say Mike Vrabel can't fix these problems?
Well, yeah, I mean, you probably, this year, I mean, you're probably there. This is year five. You know, there's not, you know, can you pay him $30 million to get another year's look? I mean, maybe you can, but I mean, I think you're at that point in time. And it doesn't, he's been through it all. Wisnut, it was wide open. We're just going to go. So he gets killed. So what's the mandate for Mark when he comes in? Mike, you're saying, okay, what we have to do is we have to protect him.
Mm-hmm.
So we start protecting the quarterback, and we're running the ball pretty good, and we're doing all that. And then there was this roar about the offense is so antiquated. We don't ever throw the ball down the field. We don't ever. It's not exciting. It's not. It's this and that and the other. We're winning games. I mean, the quarterback is alive.
Oh, the fans didn't care about winning games.
Yeah. I mean, they wanted to be wide open. So then you say, okay, fine. And we bring in a young guru offensive coordinator that's wide open. We're going to take a look at it now.
And by the end of the year, what's everyone screaming?
And everybody's saying, I've got to protect the quarterback. How can we protect the quarterback? Yeah, okay. So, you know, you can't catch up. And the bottom line is they're fans. And that's what happens. But that's why you don't listen to the fans.
Although the team has reacted according to the fans. I'm not saying because of the fans, but the team did go from... Yeah, I mean, the mandate to Mularkey was obvious. Protect the quarterback, and he did it. However you want to make that out to be, other than the hamstring injury, which I don't know how Mike Mularkey is supposed to keep Marcus from injuring his hamstring. But other than that, over 2 years, they did it. Then they all open it up, throw the ball down the field. They get Johnny Joe from the Rams, and he comes in here, and all of a sudden they throw, and everyone says, run the ball. And now Now everyone just puts the blame on Marcus one way or another, which may be fair, may not be. I don't know. But I do think that a lot of that has screwed with him. I don't know. You know, I feel like if you're going to be a great quarterback, you have to overcome that. If you're they're throwing roadblocks your way, you've got to overcome the roadblocks. You've got to learn. You've got to get better. You've got to, you know, kind of do things on your own. And he hasn't been able to do that. But I am getting to that point. Let's go to your phones. Steve is up first on the Titans. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, thanks, fellas. Y'all kind of stole a little bit of my thunder because even though Mike Mularkey and Rabisco were here, we went to the playoffs and won a playoff game, fool. I don't understand some of these fans. But what you do not do after you fire your playoff winning coach is – well, y'all covered him. Y'all covered the offensive coordinator. But also, do not pick injured players in the first round ever again. He ain't met an injured player in the first round he ain't like with this guy from the defense and Corey Davis.
So
get
true.
A player that can make impact immediately. And that would be my final note. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. That is so true. I mean, John Robinson's banking on injured players and – not that Corey Davis has been a total health liability in his career, but he hasn't broken out like we thought, you know, the number five pick would break out.
Well, I mean, we haven't had anybody break out like that. And the bottom line is, I mean, you're going to finally, I think this year, you will be at a point in time where you will be looking for those breakout players. You know, you're going to be looking for somebody to give you a spark. That's like Kansas City. I mean, you watch Kansas City play. I mean, they've got the quarterback. We all know that. And they've got an offensive line that's pretty good. And they really got a running back that's pretty good. But I'm going to tell you what now. Those receivers, it's like a track team. I mean, they're not going to block. They are not possession receivers. They are not any of that. But if you want to throw the ball down the field a long, long ways, I mean, they run down the field now. They're like gazelles.
I don't think Mecole Hardman caught one pass at Georgia. I can't ever remember him. He returned a lot of punts now, but I can't remember Mecole Hardman doing anything that mattered at Georgia. And now here he is at Kansas City. Go long.
Lighten it up.
And because he runs a 4-2,
and
ball's
and,
right in his hands.
And that's, you know what they're looking for. When they go out and look at a receiver, they're saying, you know, well, how tall? Well, I don't care. Well, how much you want him to weigh? Well, I don't care. Well, how fast you want him to be? I want
fast.
Him fast. And after you get past that, then everything else will be okay.
Teddy is up next on Jared and the GM. What's up, Teddy?
Yeah, pretty good. Hey, he needs to go back to the way he played years ago. You know, a few years back, he was more hungry. He was hungry for the game, and now they're babying him too much. He's just being babied too much, and that's the problem. He's being babied too much. That's all I got to say.
So I don't completely – thank you for your call. I don't totally agree with that, but I don't disagree with that from this regard. If you're going to get up there and preach to me about accountability and you're going to let the quarterback go out there and play like garbage, at some point, don't you then have to take the quarterback out?
Well, I think this. I think that. I think that he has been baby. You know, we've made excuses for him. We've done all that. But that's, I think that's part of raising a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't, you know, I don't apologize for those things. I mean, it's like, you know, if my 2-year-old son is not really well disciplined and he's maybe screaming when he's, guess what? I'm not apologizing for that. He's screaming because something's wrong, you know. So figure out what's wrong and get that corrected, and it'll end. Now, if my, you know, 26-year-old son is screaming like a little girl, now there's something wrong. You know, we got to see what this is. Yeah, that's inexcusable.
Well, that's like Trubisky. Like, I think Trubisky kind of stinks, and even watching him yesterday, like, I still think that. I mean, Chicago's going to win games by having an incredible defense and running the football. And I'm okay with winning games like that. But in that first game against Green Bay, they wanted to throw. And everyone was like, Trubisky stinks. What are they doing? What are they doing? What? I'm like, it's a third-year quarterback. Now, just because he's not Mahomes and was picked ahead of Mahomes does not mean he is Mahomes. So I'm not going to apologize for the fact that Trubisky's not in a position to win them games. Now, in 2 years, they're going to have to pay Trubisky. And they're going to have to get rid of some of these defensive players. And then Trubisky's going to have to win them games, and he probably won't. And then you got a problem. Tommy is up next. Go ahead, Tommy.
Hi, guys. I just wanted to say, first of all, to talk about the coach, what the coach said. There was a practice where Corey Davis wasn't even out there with the starters, and he's supposed to be the number one guy. I don't understand that, and it baffles me. And then number two, Marcus, when he come into the league, had never been under center, and then everybody's shocked that he can't play from the pocket, keeps getting sacked, looks uncomfortable. Of course he looks uncomfortable. He's not used to it. And I'm not defending Marcus by no means, because I think we should have pulled the plug last year. But that being said, I also got a question. When was the last time we had a 4,000-yard passer for a quarterback that was our backup? I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks for the call. I mean, I think he's talking about Tannehill, right? Being a 4,000 passer. Well, I mean, Neil O'Donnell played in the Super Bowl. You know, Kerry Collins was the backup here for a while and played in the Super Bowl. No offense to Tannehill, but he hasn't even sniffed a Super Bowl. The closest Tannehill will ever come to the Super Bowl is the fact that this year it's being played in the stadium where he used to be the quarterback. Like, both Neil O'Donnell and Kerry Collins were Super Bowl quarterbacks. And Billy Volek, in like a six-week period, might have thrown for 4,000 yards in those 6 weeks alone in 2005. So to answer your question, a lot of the time. Matt Hasselbeck played in a Super Bowl and was the backup quarterback here. Fitzpatrick lit it up last year, and he was the backup quarterback here. I mean, I'm completely unprepared for that question, and I'm telling you, you've had, in the last 20 years, three guys as your long time, as your main term backups, and they'd all played in Super Bowls. So before you get to, well, look at Tannehill, he threw 4,000 yards, put him out there, I'd say Neil O'Donnell played in a Super Bowl. Matt Hasselbeck played in a Super Bowl. Kerry Collins played in a Super Bowl. Now, they put Kerry Collins out there, and they went 13-3. But a lot of that wasn't that, by the way, I do believe, if you look back at it, was, I think, the single least amount of yards a Titans quarterback has ever thrown for in a year they made the playoffs, was the 2008 season. Collins.
CJ2K?
Well, CJ2K was 09, but Collins, that was CJ's first year, and he was running all over the place, and Lindale White was scoring touchdowns when they get it to about the two-yard line, and Kerry was just, hey, don't screw up the game, because we got this incredible defense with Albert Haynesworth and all these great players. And that's what he did, was he went out there and didn't screw up the game, and that's why they were 13-3. And then Algie Crumpler and Lindell White can't hold on to the ball. They lose to the Ravens, and I don't even want to get into it. More of your phone, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Speaking, though, of Tannehill and accountability, is Vrabel's preaching of accountability a warning sign to Mariota? We'll get to that coming up next. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
We focused over the weekend and today on accountability and fundamentals. And that's just, you know, what I felt like was something that was easy, that we could all look at in the meeting rooms this morning. Being accountable. You know, I told him a story. I had a teacher in the fifth grade. I hope he's watching. Not sure if he is or not, but when we got in trouble, you know, he made us write out like 3,000 times, I will take responsibility for my own actions. Figured out later on in life that was called accountability. You know, taking responsibility and fixing it. You know, it's not just enough to say, you know what, I have to be better. But it's like, I have to be better, and then this is how I'm going to fix it.
Accountability. We're going to be accountable from now on. Accountability. That's the buzzword of the week with Mike Vrabel. And yet, where is the accountability for the starting quarterback? Again, he was asked about where Marcus can get better yesterday, and he said, oh, you know, practice. But he did some good things Thursday night. He did some good things. Asked on Friday, hey, if everybody is fighting for their spots on a week-to-week basis, what about the quarterback, Mike?
But every situation is week-to-week. Is the quarterback a part of that, or is that even what we're talking about at this point?
I don't think that that's something that we're looking at right now, but it's always something that we consider every week. But not right now. I think that, you know, again, trying to emphasize the really good throws, the really good production. We got some play pass production. But then again, there was just some plays that we'd like to have back in all, in our run game, in our throw game, our defense.
So if you're going to talk about accountability, and that's going to be your buzzword, and taking responsibility for my actions, and everyone here is going to be accountable, and we're going to fix, and we're going to, then isn't it kind of talking out of the other side of your mouth to them when it comes to the quarterback, say, you know, everybody had a tough game on Thursday, and he did some good things, and he... It's hard for me to sense the accountability, how you preach accountability, then it comes to Marcus, and it's everything's roses.
Well, everything's different about the quarterback position.
Which I agree with and understand.
Everything. So, I mean, they're, you know, they don't practice the same way. They're not paid the same way. They don't get hit the same way. They don't, you know, it's all completely different. So I think, generally speaking, that's like, you know, Brady. Is somebody, you know, checking if he's doing his job on a weekly basis? Yeah, I'm sure there is. Are you planning on changing? No, never. You know, when he's 90, we'll change. But, I mean, it's just the quarterback position is different. And he realizes, I think he realizes, that, you know, if they ever do that, then I think they're, you know, they're telling you where they are, what's going to happen.
The second that the quarterback isn't set in stone, the starting quarterback, is the second you have to change the quarterback. And I go back to what the Giants did last week, where Shurmur came out Monday and said they're not committed to Eli being the starter. That right there is Eli's no longer the starter. When you come out and say, we're not sure, then you better start Daniel Jones, because you've already kind of set the trail for Eli there, and that's exactly what they did. I wonder if the accountability stuff now is a foreshadowing for, you have another game like that, I got to be accountable, you got to be accountable, and now I'm going to be just like Pat Shurmur and get up there Monday after the Falcons game and say, I'm not sure what we're doing at quarterback.
Right, but I mean, I think a Shurmur, in Shurmur's mind, and I'm just speaking, I don't, you know, I know who he is, I've been around him, I don't really know him, and certainly don't know what's going on there, but I mean, you just made the change, you know, you're done. So I mean, at the end of the year, Eli's going to be someplace else if he continues to play, and this is your guy. You know, the thing you can't do is in another 8 weeks and he's playing awful and things are really, really going bad, especially now that you don't have the running back. I mean, you can't go back to Eli now. I mean, now you wreck them both. You know, so it's not one of those. And you know, coaches try to do it. They try to flop back and forth with the quarterbacks, and they try to. And that's all. I've heard all the talk. I've never seen it work. Just does not work.
I mean, it kind of worked here. You know, when you were GM, Kerry Collins is the quarterback, Vince is the backup. You go to Vince Young. Now, this was when you were here, and I think when they made the move to Vince, that you were sitting there saying, Vince is the guy, and we're going to Vince.
Yeah,
end of story.
I said, once we make the move, once Vince is the guy, then that's the end of it.
And then were not
he's
here anymore.
Be gone. Yeah, then I
then
got
they went
fired.
Back to Kerry, and they were 13-3.
Yeah.
Then Kerry stunk it up next year, and they went back to Vince, and Vince went to the Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
But to your point, it wasn't like those teams won any Super Bowls now, you know, doing all that dancing at quarterback. And you could argue quarterback was the one thing with that freaking defense in 07 and 08. Quarterback is the one thing that absolutely held the team back. And so you can certainly make that case. I'm kind of in agreement with you. If you start going to
Tannehill.
If you keep going to and from Tannehill and Mariota, what you're doing is you become the Steelers when they were Cordell Stewart, Tommy Maddox, Cordell Stewart,
yeah,
Tommy Maddox, Cordell, Big Ben, Super Bowls.
Yeah, there you go.
And so now if you do that, are you really just saying, well, I'm going to go between Mariota and Tannehill until I can go get my Big Ben?
Well, and the hard part about Collins and like Vince, you know, is gets to the point he can't play anymore, so you lose him. But in the meantime, you probably crush the other one. Mm-hmm. So now you're sitting there without a quarterback. Now what are you going to do?
Draft check locker?
Yeah. Now you've got to go out and you've got to bring in somebody. Who's it going to be? Locker. We really like Locker. Okay. Let's start that Ferris wheel. That's what I was thinking of.
Jake is up next on Marcus. What's up, Jake?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to call because I'm not defending Marcus. I know he's made his fair share of mistakes, probably too many, but in the scheme that we're running, I mean, what more can you expect from Marcus? He's got 700 yards, 4 touchdowns, no turnovers. I mean, what if it's a run-heavy offense, isn't that what you're looking for, a quarterback who's not going to turn over the ball and is going to make those throws when they count? Obviously, he hasn't on every play, but in my opinion, he's doing exactly what he's asked. He's controlling the ball, and he's letting Derek eat. So I'll hang up and listen.
Thank you for the call. Floyd, that's not exactly a terrible take. The stats are not horrific.
Oh, he's got a good point.
When it comes to Mariota.
Yeah, he's got a good point. I think the thing that we're looking for is, you know, everybody getting back to, you know, Vrabel and his good to great thing is he's looking for somebody that can lift this team above 9. You know, we've been in 9 3 years in a row. Okay, we need to get to double digits some way, somehow. Who can do that? Well, it's got to be the quarterback. And I think that's what they're looking for, is they're looking for the great part of this is that the quarterback comes out here and he's able to find a way to win you the 10-plus games.
Pre-game show coming up on Sunday. Be sure to check it out. Our coverage Sunday begins at 7 o'clock with the kickoff, 7 to 9:30, and then the pregame show. Live for the George Jones downtown on 2nd Avenue this Sunday, 9:30 to 11:30. Jared, the GM, and Chris Sanders. Brought to you by Wholesaling, powered by RumbleOn.com, Kubota Tractors, your Middle Tennessee Kubota dealers, and Boom Boss Craft Pizza and Tap House. My other thing about the Mariota thing, when the guy brought up the stats, is when Mariota won games, but the stats were horrible, we kept having people call in and say, look at the stats. Look at the stats. And now the stats are good, but the play is horrible. And everybody said, no one's talking about the stats except that caller. That caller is the first caller that has brought up the stats.
Right.
I just find that to be, you know.
Well, his argument was a good one, which is in this offense, you know, doing what we're doing, isn't that kind of what you expect? And the truth is, yeah, you do.
I get a lot worse than those stats.
But I think those stats are, you know, 8 or 9 win stats. And we're looking for 10-plus win stats.
615-737-1025. Do you want a pair of 3-day passes to the Exit 111 Festival in Manchester Friday, October 11th through Sunday, October 13th? The lineup includes Guns N' Roses, Def Leppard, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Slayer and their last ever show in Tennessee, Deftones, Ghost, ZZ Top, and more. Be caller 5 at 615-737-1025, and you will win a pair of 3-day passes to the Exit 111 Festival in Manchester. So good luck to you on that. We'll be giving away another pair later today in the show. Coming up next, Peter Laviolette. Today was on the Midday Show. Couple interesting things to say. We'll get to that next. We'll have a Preds Minute. It's Jared and the GM right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
You know, PK was awesome. I told him that when he left. Like, he brought so much positivity to this team. Both on the ice and off the ice. He's a giving human being, and he gives constantly of himself to others. In his time here, we were a really successful hockey team, and that's got a great deal to do with him. You know, we ended up making that move, and Dante Fabbro started to show who he was, and we felt like we could do that. We feel like we've got other good defensemen as well. Dan Hamhuis has played well during the year, and we just feel like we were able to make that move, and what it did was it allowed for a guy like Duchesne to come in, like you said. And you saw him the other night. I thought he was dynamic with his game. I know it's exhibition. I know it's preseason. But, you know, sometimes you are who you are. And he was a dynamic player on the ice. So that was really positive to see. Dan Lambert, I thought he, you know, taking those 5 guys out and giving them 3 or 4 days to work on the power play, I thought it looked really good in game 1. So that was a positive. Well, those voices, I think, are important. Those players are important. And now we got to put it together for the regular season.
Peter Laviolette today on the Midday Show. And remember last week how we were talking, how can they have a game 2 days after the start of camp? Like, don't they need to practice? And you heard Laviolette say right there, we held back the 5 guys on the power play so that they could work on the power play. Then they get out there. And by the way, perfect placement by Laviolette. to put those five guys out there on the ice in their first game on that power play against a Tampa team who played, Ian, back me up on this, absolutely nobody.
Very little. I think Kucherov played one or two games.
I'm talking about on Saturday.
Oh, on Saturday?
Paquette was the only guy.
I don't think I recognize very many people at all. Scott Wedgwood or whatever that guy's name was.
Their third string goalie.
He didn't even play in the NHL last year, so.
As I said, might be working at Kroger right now, although not that there's anything against working at Kroger, but he literally may be working there, right? I don't know. Or, you know, in a couple weeks. So, just brilliant on Laviolette's part. Instead of the, hey, get them out there, get them going for games, get them, hey, you know what, I'm going to put these guys together in a preseason game against nobody, let them score a couple, which they did, and that power play looked gorgeous, you know, let them score a couple on that power play, and then all of a sudden, I can point to the group and say, hey, you guys are coming along, power play's going to be all right, and then everybody gets a little confidence. So I tip my cap to Peter on that one, which I'm praying that that power play group is as legit as they looked on Saturday night against the nobodies that Tampa Bay sent out there.
Off to a good start. Anyway, I mean, that's all you can do is get off to a good start.
Well, I think it's smart on Peter's part to, A, give those guys time to practice before he put them out there in a game together, and, B, I think it's smart on Peter's part to put them out there on a Saturday night home game when Tampa's not bringing anybody. I thought it was just genius on both ends of the spectrum. And that is going to be your first power play unit. Deshane, Arvidsson, Forsberg, Johansson, and Josi, which I have always forever hated that Peter loves to go four forwards, one defenseman on the first power play unit. But if those are the four forwards and that's the one defenseman who's essentially a forward who plays defense, I can live with it.
That's somewhat league standard.
I know, but I hate it.
In a lot of teams.
I hate it. Like, I hated it when it would be, you know, those three, Craig Smith and Subban. You know, like, that just used to drive me insane. Now, Peter Laviolette was asked another interesting question. It was about his time in Nashville. And as we know, you know, Adam Vingan has come on this show multiple times and talked about, hey, this is probably the first year that Peter Laviolette walks into a season facing pressure. And Peter has made it to the playoffs 5 years in a row in his first 5 years here. And he was asked by Darren, you know, what about Nashville? What has he learned? What does he think? This is what Peter Laviolette said today on the Midday Show.
You're right. I've spent all my time in the East. And if you remember going back, there was a time where the East only came to Nashville once every third year.
Yeah, right.
You'd only play the division.
That's right.
And so, you know, I might not have been here for 3 years. There's a chance that on that third year, I could have been fired. Like, I might have missed it. I might have missed the trip. Yeah. I might not even have made it. And so I feel like I was hardly ever in Nashville. I didn't know anything about it. And I remember when we were taking the job and I was talking to David Poile, we were leaving to coach the World Championships that next morning at like 6 a.m. And there was a decision being made that night. My wife and I are looking like, Nashville? Are we doing Nashville? Like, we're not even sure about what it's all about. And for me right now, Nashville, one of the best cities in the United States. Nashville is Predator hockey, one of the best hockey markets in the United States. It's just awesome. I love it.
So that was Peter today on the Midday Show, and it got me thinking. Do you think Peter has enough respect in the town for the town that has that he has all that respect for? I mean, to me, I feel like it's kind of like you, like when you were kind of forced into moving here, probably didn't know a ton about it, and now you and Sally have decided to live here for forever. I feel like with him, I think he has embraced the city, and he has embraced the fan base, and I think he believes what he says there about it. And yet, last year at the end, when they weren't playing great, all we ever heard about were fans that were upset with Laviolette. Do we think that he has the respect that maybe he has for the city?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think this is what's always hard about coaching or GMing or anything you do in a pro sport is you can't separate the hockey and a person. People want to, but you can't. So in the professional world, you are what your hockey team says you are. And when they look down there, if they're not happy with what they see in the hockey team, then they're not going to be happy with you. I mean, even though they may like you, really like you, and you're a great person, and you love Nashville, all that stuff, it's not the way it works. You know, that's the hard part. because, I mean, so many of these guys that end up in any sport that end up getting fired or moving or whatever the case may be, I mean, most of those guys are really good guys because you can imagine as a coach, you're dealing with, you know, 20 or 30 guys on a daily basis, and you've got to be able to communicate with them and inspire them and do all the things you got to do. I mean, it takes a special human being to be able to do that stuff.
So I look at this two ways. Number one, I mean, I think a lot of people love Nashville, and I mean, Peter knew when he took the job, just like you knew when you had the job, and everybody, you know, eventually one day Peter Laviolette's not going to be the Nashville Predators coach. I don't know when that day is. It could be next year. It could be 25 years from now. I don't know. But at some point, he will not be the head coach of the Nashville Predators. We all know that.
Right.
But I think where I sit is, like, I was frustrated with last season, too. And there were a lot of players who simply did not play up to their ability. And that does fall on the shoulders of the coach. The league worst power play falls on the shoulders of the coach. And the coach was the first person to take responsibility for that. And yet, I think there's a lot of people out here that just gloss over the fact that Peter's been to the playoffs 5 years in a row. For a franchise that did not make the playoffs 5 years in a row. Forever. Making the playoffs 5 years in a row is kind of a big deal to me. I mean, it is in every other sport. Now, it's harder in the NFL to make the playoffs.
Some sports,
the NBA, nobody cares about making the playoffs. It's either can we win the championship or we try to lose it as possible.
Some sports is different. So.
But he still has made the playoffs every year. I mean, the first year he made the playoffs, nobody thought they'd be any good, and then they end up having home ice in the first round against Chicago. Goes to the second round in years 2 and 4, and goes to the cup final in year 3. And so I think a lot of people get mad at Laviolette because they look at it like, you know, they built it up from round 1 to round 2 to the Stanley Cup final. And so they're saying, hey, build, build, build. And now they're looking at it like, well, they were Stanley Cup final. Then they were second round. Now they're first round. And it's only getting worse, 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 worse. And now that's... But I just feel like in sports, it's never linear. It's not linear. It's not, you know, we get to the first round this year, the second round next year, the third round the next year, and then win the championship. It never works like that. I'll give you an example in baseball, for example. Bobby Cox, one of the, you know, people love him, in Atlanta. World Series, out in the LCS, win the World Series. You know, it's not like a... Well, we got to the championship and lost this year, so now we go back and win this year. It doesn't necessarily always work like that in sports. And to the point I'm making about Laviolette is just because they went out in the first round last year doesn't mean that he can't get them back to the Stanley Cup final this year or next year.
Well, and that's why I think when we talked about this earlier, I mean, I think the expectations are that we're going to make the playoffs and that we're going to go, you know, deep into the playoffs.
If they get to the second round and lose, do you think that they'll fire Laviolette?
I wouldn't think. I mean, I don't know.
If they don't make the playoffs, then I think Laviolette might be in trouble. You know, that would be where making the playoffs may be the point of, or I mean, excuse me, not making the playoffs may be like the absolute no-no for Laviolette.
Yeah, in hockey. I mean, it's, you know.
But like at this season to not make the playoffs, then it's hard to argue against. You were cup final, second round, first round, not even making the playoffs.
It's always the trend. You know, they want, which way are you going? And when they see it, you know, it was a cup final, and now you're down here, and now you're down here. They see that as, you know what, we're not going that way.
Another first round exit, I think, is kind of a question.
That's why it doesn't, I mean, you can go back and forth a little bit as long as if you've been to the finals, that's what the fans expect. Well, the next year, if you don't go to the finals, then, you know, but if the year after that or the year, you better get back up to the finals.
Mm-hmm.
If you went to the finals and never make it back to the finals, now all of a sudden they're going, well, you know, it's not these going out in the first round's not the fluke. That going to the finals was the fluke. And so that's where they don't want to be.
I feel like with Peter, as far as he's concerned this season, I feel like not making the playoffs, he's probably gone. If they make the playoffs and lose in the first round, then it's kind of a question mark. And I don't know the answer there because, I mean, you know, That's almost like an ownership call, it feels like. And, you know, what do we, I don't know what they think. And I don't know what Poyle would think at that point. And then if they get to the second round or better, I think Peter keeps his job. I mean, like, if they get the Western Conference final and they lose in five games, Peter should keep his job.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine him not being the coach. You know, I can't imagine him getting fired. Now, like you said, if they don't make the playoffs or if we're
league worst power
playing
play
awful or... and we're all that stuff, then yeah, you know, maybe some.
That's our little Preds Minute right there. We'll have more. We'll be live tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. Get excited about that. I think there's a chance, Floyd, that we'll have a very special guest return to Jared and the GM tomorrow, one that I know will get you nice and tingly in your warm places that you will get excited about. So get excited for that tomorrow as we'll be live at Bridgestone Arena. They take on Carolina. Two more preseason games to go. Coming up next, I watched a ton of college football this weekend. Now that we've got 4 weeks under our belt, I got a take that I can't even, that if I had told myself a month ago I would have had this take, I would have been stunned. We'll get to that next. Jared and the GM, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.